AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide from Syngenta, the first dicamba herbicide premix, which offers both contact control to manage the weeds you see and residual control to help protect against the weeds you don't see yet. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide. A strong voice for agriculture has found a way to get back into the farm policy game. We'll have the details of that. And he's got some interesting perspective on current conditions inside of Congress. And with the first spring rains of the year in Iowa, it's a perfect day for a conservation-minded farmer forum.
Live from the glorious spring rain-scented prairie via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with former Representative Colin Peterson and Tom Sell from Sell & Associates. Then it is our Farmer Forum, panelists Mitchell Hora and Tim Recker. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, did you hear the first rains of the year go rumbling through eastern Iowa early morning?
I did.
Yeah.
It's like somebody lit an enormous scented candle outside. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Feels resplendent. It looks like it looks like the frost is taking a hit. It really does. And there's been plenty of runoff because the dry run behind the floor, behind the broadcast bunker has actually got water in it again this morning.
Okay.
So there's quite a bit of this rain that's just running off, but the frost has got to be taking a hit. It's got to be with these warm temperatures and that, and the rains. Yeah.
Oh man. Yesterday in the sunshine, yesterday afternoon, I was out after the afternoon show just taking it in. Man, there were people running around in shorts and t-shirts for crying out loud. I said, you kids, put on a coat. It's still March. You'll catch your death out there.
Fantastic. Yep. Colin Peterson, we're going to have a great conversation.
Yeah.
Because of scheduling, we had to have this conversation yesterday, but it's a great conversation. He's got some awesome insights into what is going on inside of Congress right now. He's got some great perspectives on the climate forward approach of the Biden administration and USDA. We cover a lot of ground in this conversation with Colin Peterson and Tom Sell from Combest Sell. And then the guy, Recker and Hora, are already all fired up about the Farmer Forum today. Recker's been sending me pictures of his wetland that he put in last year, and it's doing its job this morning. It's absolutely fantastic how it's working. So we'll get an update from Recker, and of course Mitchell, always excited to talk about what's going on the conservation front. I think he's got some ideas on the carbon market that we'll talk to Mitchell about too. All right, man, let's get to it.
A conservation conversation, would you say?
I would absolutely say that. Yes.
Chip, the House will vote today to clear the $1.9 trillion COVID stimulus package for President Joe Biden's signature today, Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said. House lawmakers received the paperwork on Tuesday from the Senate after that chamber's marathon Votorama that ended Saturday afternoon. The House is expected to vote along party lines to send the bill to Biden's desk following similar votes during the last few weeks. Biden says, of course, he will sign it before expanded unemployment insurance benefits run out on March 14. That's coming right up.
Yeah, it is. We're going to have a conversation tomorrow with Vince Malanga, economist, LaSalle Economics, about what this stimulus package might do for the economy.
Well, speaking of the economy, economists surveyed by the Wall Street Journal expect 5.95% GDP growth. That would be the fastest in nearly 40 years, measured from the fourth quarter of last year to the same period this year. That was up from their projection last month and would be the U.S. economy's fastest upward burst since 1983, Chip. The analysts also lifted their forecast for inflation and job growth from last month's survey. They expect consumer prices to rise 2.48% by December from a year earlier, and for employers to add an average of, get this, 514,000 jobs per month over the next four quarters. Is this a recipe for inflation, is my concern?
Absolutely it is. And it is a recipe for higher interest rates. I mean, I remember what interest rates were in 1983. That was my senior year in high school, first year of college. And those student loans carried a hefty price tag on them. No doubt about that.
Well, the Conservation Reserve Program Grassland sign-up that was to start March 15 will be delayed, Chip, until further notice, according to USDA. The administration previously ordered an extension of the current general CRP sign-up and has so far not yet set a deadline for farmers to offer land for enrollment. The action is part of an agency-wide and government-wide review by the Biden administration to gain an understanding of various programs. So holding off for now, but we know they want to increase acres in the CRP.
Yeah, it feels like the cap is more of a minimum that the Biden administration is looking to get into the CRP.
Well, Washington and Beijing are finalizing details of their first high-level meeting between the powers since President Joe Biden took office. It'll be held in Alaska. The Chinese foreign minister said on Sunday that China was willing to engage with the Biden administration, but urged the U.S. to, quote, move in the same direction and remove all its unreasonable restrictions on bilateral cooperation. Now, Chip, the Biden administration has also called a summit with Japan, India, and Australia on Friday. That session is expected to focus on generating a united front to deal with China. Interesting.
Completely expected. I think we anticipated that he would be looking to pull some allies into the effort to confront China.
Yep. One more thing real quickly. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack did speak with the European Union Commissioner for Ag Rural Development. Sounds like it went rather well. Chip.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Trying to stay on the ground, my feet on the ground with all this wind in Missouri today, Chip.
I tell you what, the south wind is blowing those warm temperatures up to northeast Iowa, and I'm loving it, man. I am loving it. So rules and regulations at the retail level, we talk about rules and regulations with farmers, and they're obviously concerned about it. What about at the retail level?
Yeah, I have a number of people in the industry who often remind me that if there is a regulatory agency, ag retail is in their purview because of so much of the breadth and depth of what ag retailers do, right? And the ARA just is now starting to finish up their virtual fly-ins. You know, they could not bring in their members to DC because of the ongoing pandemic. However, they are meeting with lawmakers. And I just had Richard Gupton from ARA on our The Scoop podcast to give an update on what are the policy priorities for the organization and its ag retail members going forward. And I would share that the two biggest headlines are ones that I think people predicted that would be carried over into 21 and the Biden administration, and that is carbon and what's going on and being developed there, and how agriculture has a role, and then also ongoing pesticide regulations. You know, we have some individual products and active ingredients that are continuing to get ongoing attention. But also important to ag retail would be transportation and broadband infrastructure. So not only the physical infrastructure connecting rural and urban America, but also the technological infrastructure bringing opportunities for business and how to maximize and optimize technology. And another big area to watch is going to be the ag labor and workforce.
Yep.
And so a lot of policy priorities for ag retailers to keep their eyes on in the coming
Excellent. Year. Excellent. Thank you, Margie. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We've got Tom Sell and Colin Peterson next. Growers know that no two seasons are alike, from weather conditions to pest pressures and commodity prices, but don't let chance dictate how your season will turn out. Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta, joins us now. Bobby, how can growers plan to mitigate some of the uncertainty surrounding their weed management this year?
Yeah, for weed management in particular, variable weather can greatly impact our ability to manage weed pressures. Rather than taking a reactive approach to weather events and weed pressures, there are a few things that can help remove the guesswork and increase the likelihood of success against your toughest weeds in 2021. We recommend planning herbicide applications that align with the calendar year, making sure that we have a good foundation set before planting so that we can deliver some residual control before the weeds have that ability to break through. And then finally, delivering products that deliver multiple effective sites of action that are going to control the weeds you see and the ones you don't.
All right, so Bobby, what herbicide program delivers that combination of contact and residual control that we need?
In today's environment of trait options that growers have in soybeans, we strongly recommend, regardless of your trait platform, start the year off strong with a pre-emergent herbicide. At Syngenta, we offer products such as Boundary, Broadax, or Prefix that really allow us to set a solid foundation. For dicamba-tolerant soybeans, we now have product offerings such as Tavium. Tavium is the market's first dicamba premix, meaning it delivers both contact and residual control to manage both the weeds you see and the ones you don't. This is important as it's going to set guys up to have success as it incorporates both that pre and the post-emergent products, which is absolutely key.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Bobby. That was Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta, explaining the importance of using an effective residual herbicide like Tavium as part of a sound weed management program. Don't let time run out on your herbicide management plan. Visit SyngentaUS.com/Tavium or speak with your Syngenta retailer to learn more. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium plus Vapor Grip technology is a restricted-use pesticide. Vapor Grip is used under license from Monsanto Technology, LLC.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? CalfPerk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing and nursing. Get CalfPerk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Jim McCoy. Glad that you could join us this morning. We've got a great conversation coming our way. We've got former Congressman Colin Peterson from Minnesota on the line with us. Congressman Peterson, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thank you. Good morning.
Glad that you're here. And we've got Tom Sell, who is a founder of Combest Sell & Associates. Tom, how are things down in Lubbock this morning?
We're hanging in there, Chip. It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for having us today.
You bet. How's the recovery issues going down in Texas?
You know, we are not, unlike Mr. Peterson's country, we are not built for this kind of cold. I'm out in the west on the plains, so we do get cold weather snaps, but the depth and the length of the polar vortex was exceptional, and so there's still a lot of recovery. There's a lot of unwinding the excess rates that were charged, but it's people step up in this kind of a situation.
Yeah.
So we're coming along. We're getting back to work.
Good. Yeah, boy, the recovery process is going to take a little while there. There's a lot of pipes to be fixed down in Texas. That's for sure. Okay, you are Colin Peterson and Combest Sell. That seems like a bit of a strange combination, Congressman Peterson. What's the motivation here?
Well, I don't think it's strange at all.
Okay.
You know, I've been getting, calls from people, starting, I guess, in December, from all kinds of different folks saying, you have to stay engaged. Mm-hmm. You need to figure out some way to be involved in the agriculture policy going forward. We need you. We need your voice and so forth. And so I was getting, inquiries from different folks, and Tom gave me a call and asked if I would consider some kind of an arrangement. And his clients are people that I know very well, that I've worked with my whole career, many of them in Minnesota, and it's just a good fit for me to get back into the game. I'm not going to lobby this year because there's a ban on lobbying, so I'm going to be careful about that. But I think I can be helpful in terms of providing advice to Tom and his people, but also to his clients in terms of how to deal with the new majority in the Ag Committee and the new chairman and members. And, I just think I can be helpful. And frankly, I was getting a little bit restless sitting here on the couch. I'm not very good at being retired.
Well, and, I will throw my voice in there with those that were saying that you need to stay engaged. When we think about the amount of experience that was lost off of the Senate Ag Committee and the House Ag Committee, it's pretty staggering. What do you make of the leadership of the House Ag Committee now, Congressman?
Well, I think it's too early to give them any kind of a grade. I think they're working hard. On our side, Chairman Scott, for my advice, kept my staff, which I think will serve him well, because they're experienced people, good people that know what they're doing and have been around the block a couple times. G.T. Thompson is, he's reaching out, and I've been hearing that he's having all kinds of Zoom calls with people and so forth. So I think they'll step up to the plate. This process that's gone on here with this reconciliation has been somewhat problematic in the way that it was handled, and it created a partisan situation for the committee, which was not their fault.
Sounds like you're saying that it might be the leadership's fault with the...
This is one of the problems that we've got in Congress, frankly. There's too much top-down leadership involvement all the way through Congress and all of the committees. And one of the things I was able to do as chairman was kind of mute that somewhat because of my relationship with the speaker and others. And it's, it's just the way it works. When the Republicans were in charge, they were doing the same sort of top-down situation, and I resisted that. I think the way to run the Congress is have a bottom-up, and I ran the committee that way. And I think you get better results if you operate that way. But this reconciliation process is such that that's not, the reason they're doing it is to get around their situation. Tom will remember back in 96, they used reconciliation to do the farm bill then, when they get freedom to farm. So it's not their fault. They worked through it. And
gotcha.
The issue is going to be more the secretary. In the way they put this together, the secretary has all kinds of latitude in terms of writing the rules for this thing, and that's really where the action is going to be.
Gotcha. Tom, I know that you would agree with Congressman Peterson on the bottom-up approach. So much work needs to start at the subcommittee level, and it doesn't feel like that's happening like it has in the past.
Yeah, it's true, Chip, and I do. Colin said it perfectly. From the fact, and certainly I add my voice to those that thought, Chairman Peterson has so much yet to give.
Yeah.
In terms of leadership on agricultural policy, and even in our firm, we kind of take that same ground up approach. We are so proud, to get to represent a diverse set of agricultural interests from across the country, but all kind of starting from the ground up. Grassroots organizations, grower organizations of various commodities, and infrastructure organizations like the Rural Electric. So we're kind of literally in our firm from the ground up, and we do a lot of work to try and educate back to our clients, to growers across the nation, so they can pick wise battles and then work with the members of Congress. So I'm also, I agree with Colin. I'm optimistic about the future. David Scott, G.T. Thompson, they're both very genuine good men who, I'd say I'm a conservative. I'm the conservative in this bunch, so I never like change, right? I just love to stick with. I wish Mr. Peterson could have been coronated chairman for generations to come, but that's not the way our system works, and so we've got to deal with that change. And happily, I think we have good leadership on both the House and the Senate side, folks that will be stand up and be good leaders for ag.
Cool, good, Congressman Peterson. What do you make of the Biden administration's climate forward approach? Climate is front and center at all the agencies. Is that going to work?
Well, I don't think we know. We don't really know what it is that they're going to be proposing in terms of agriculture. I mean, I've had discussions with Robert Bonney and with the secretary and others, but it's a work in progress, you know. And I think my advice to them is to, you know, make sure that they include the producers in this discussion. Yeah. And that they don't move ahead with something that's not workable from a producer standpoint, because they could poison the well for a long time if they do this wrong. So, you know, that's been my advice to them. But clearly, the administration, this is front and center for them. There are many on our side of the aisle in the on the House Ag Committee that this is their major issue, and in the Democratic caucus. So it's something that has to be dealt with. You know, we've made good progress within the, you know, the farm bills and the legislation we've done in the committee in terms of putting policies forward that I think get at this, whether that's going to be adequate or whether those need to be added on to or improved, that remains to be seen. But we really don't know at this point what they're going to be proposing and what they're going to do, and we just have to keep an eye on it.
Gotcha. Last question for you, Congressman. What do you hope to accomplish with Combest Cell?
We're going to be in partnership with Combest Cell. We think they're a great operation. Their clients are friends of mine and people that I've worked with over the years, and I'm just going to try to use my experience and expertise to be helpful however I can while staying within the laws. That's what I'm going to try to do.
Excellent. Excellent. Tom, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it, and good luck with this guy. I think you got a good one.
Oh, I think it's going to be great, Chip. I think stay out of trouble, that's understated. But, you know, we all know Congressman Peterson. He's going to be a force, and we want to be a strong force for agriculture and for producers across the land. So I think this is a great arrow to put back into the quiver. So we're excited about it, Chip. And thanks for the time this morning.
You bet. Congressman Peterson, thank you so much for your time. Good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll be back with the Farmer Forum next here on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, some pressure on the grains today. What's going on?
Yeah, rough day, Chip. I think you can roll it all the way back to yesterday, about this time at USDA. It, you know, bulls wanted to see something that added some fuel to their fire and just didn't get it. As a matter of fact, USDA didn't do anything, basically. Right. You know, hardly worth putting the report out in terms of the domestic tables. Even on the global tables, they didn't do a whole lot. So, you know, just disappointing on that front, I think. And then, you know, Argentina's in line for some rains next week, it looks like, in forecast models now. And that's adding to the price pressure in the both the corn and soybean markets this morning.
Yeah, it's a tough day. We're running the risk of doing some technical damage to the markets here this morning. So it's a pay attention here kind of day in the grains. I don't think there's any question about it. Some pressure in the livestock trade as well this morning.
Yeah, you know, it's broad-based across the grain and livestock markets and really across commodities. But livestock specific, you know, we're seeing lower cash cattle trade, steady lower, I guess, in that 113, 114 range. So about where we've stuck for the last month plus. Yeah. But, you know, just not getting any kind of upward traction in the cash market. And as a result, we're seeing more of the premium come out of the futures there in that market. On the hog side of things, just, you know, lack of excitement, I guess, across the commodity sector is probably the biggest thing. Still going to keep an eye on that Chinese situation and the ASF and how that influences pork imports moving forward, but nothing new on that front today.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
Life is a gamble, a game we all play, but you need to save something for a rainy day.
There it is. That's the line I was like, waiting for.
Like today.
Like today.
I've actually saved up some ham from Christmas that I took out of the freezer. I don't know if that's a thing or not, but it's sitting on the counter right now. I can't wait for lunch, baby. Yeah.
Big old chunks, too.
Big old chunks.
Good, good, good. All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Enjoyed that conversation with former Congressman Peterson and with Tom Sell from Combest Sell. It's going to be interesting to watch how that dynamic comes together at Combest Sell and some of the proposals that they are pushing in the future. It's a team to watch. Davis is the bottom line. It's a team to watch for some innovative thinking coming out of that group in the future.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to the Farmer Forum. We've got Tim Recker, Northeast Iowa. Mr. Recker, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good morning, Chip. I'm doing great. Everything's cool here in Northeast Iowa.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when the thunder started rumbling through here this morning about, I don't know what it was, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, I was thinking about you and the fact that you're on the show and your wetland. How's it performing this morning?
Well, what we've experienced in the last 24 hours is dramatic climate change in Northeast Iowa. Specifically around the Arlington area. We've had a foot of snow on all the ground, and now we have none within 24 hours. I call that real climate change. And the wetland did exactly what it's supposed to do. We're seeing, so the water is infiltrating down through the soil, getting into the tile lines. That thing, I sent you some pictures, it's cascading over. It's slowing the water down. It's doing what it's supposed to do. It's just perfect. Then there was a couple dozen honkers on there this morning, too.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. It looks like it's doing exactly what it's intended to do and how it was intended to do it. So really, really cool stuff going on. And now let's bring in for the first time on the Farmer Forum the really, really charming Mitchell Hora. Mitch, how you doing, buddy?
That's what the advertisement says anyway. I don't know. We're pretty hyped up. But, hey, you guys are playing the ad. You guys are the ones saying that we're charming. You know, you heard it here. You heard it here first.
Yeah, and I think I heard it from you. That's where I heard it.
Yeah, I guess so. Self-proclaimed.
I love it. So tell us about the podcast, Fieldwork.
Yeah, Fieldwork's in season 3. Just started going out last week with Bill Northey. Was on there last week, and we had Farm Journal on there as well, which was great. A new episode out today talking about financing your farming operation, especially when it comes to implementing more sustainable ag systems.
Cool. Just want to remind everybody that the Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. We've got a long list of sponsors. Here's a few of them. American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, National Corn Growers Association, many, many more. And it is done with the financial and technical support of USDA's NRCS. Mitchell, field work is very, very conservation oriented and your work is, it's not just your generation's work is the point that I'm getting at, because it's something that's near and dear to many generations in your farm and family, right?
Yeah. And so the Fieldwork podcast is, the whole premise is conventional farmers talking about the pros and cons when it comes to implementing these sustainable ag systems.
Right.
And I'm seventh generation on my family's farm here in Washington County, Iowa, so Southeast Iowa. And Zach, the Minnesota Millennial Farmer, is my co-host. He's from like central Minnesota, west central Minnesota, where implementing no-till and implementing cover crops, 500 miles north of me, it looks way different. than what we are doing here on our Southeast Iowa farm. So, but I think really having those conversations and showcasing, yeah, this is something that everybody needs to be involved in. It's not going to look the same for every single farm, but here are the innovative things that farmers are doing. Here's a way to think about it outside the box, and here's resources that you can utilize to just get the ball rolling on your family's operation. And I think, you know, the stars are aligning that the opportunities are really there to take advantage and to implement on your farm.
Excellent. Excellent. Guys, we in the conversation that we just played with Colin Peterson, former Congressman Peterson, we talked about the climate forward approach that is throughout the Biden administration at USDA. Tim, do you see opportunity or risk to your operation in this climate forward approach? Is it, and put a timeline on it. What's your take?
I think I see both risk and reward to it. We're set up really well because we've changed our attitude up here, in Northeast Iowa. We've adopted the good conservation practices. We've been going to more no-till. We've tried to do as much cover crops as we possibly can, and it's working very well in our size of operation, and it can work very well in every size of operation. It reduces fuel. It gets more water infiltration. I saw it this morning. I drove the fields on my cover crop fields and saw there was no water standing in those fields where the ones that didn't have cover crops did. It's making sense to farmers. My only problem is that we're selling it to the farmer as helping climate, the climate change. And to me, it's helping me and my bottom line doing all those things and making my soil better. I mean, it's really what regenerative agriculture is all about. And I have a little bit of problem saying, well, I'm doing it to help the climate. I'm doing it to help my soil and where I'm at right here. And every farmer, and Mitchell said it right, it's much different in his area for conservation than it is in my area. And that's the secret that USDA has a hard time figuring out, because it's not a cookie cutter approach. It's what's good in specific areas that works is what has to be adopted.
And that's where the risk comes in, Tim, because if the federal government decides, listen, there needs to be some sort of a cookie cutter approach to this, which is how the federal government looks at most things, they're going to start putting rules and regulations out there that if you don't follow these, you're a bad actor. And that's the longer term risk, right?
And that's always been the problem, whether it's CRP waterways or whatever. Yep. It has to fit across the entire nation, and it doesn't fit for Tim Recker in Northeast Iowa, always. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Hopefully, we're going to have some flexibility, whether we're talking carbon trading, that we can actually tweak some of those rules and regulations to fit areas. Because the goal is to get a majority of farmers doing better things in conservation. Not a select few, but to get a majority, so it really pushes the needle and makes a difference.
Absolutely. Mitchell, what about you? Opportunity or risk?
Chip, we're going to need a couple hours more here to chat here today on this carbon deal, But
yeah.
I think there's opportunity and risk, of course, as there is now as the government is looking at getting involved. I hope the opportunity is going to be that there's a lot more validation in a carbon market. There's a lot more standardization. There's more structure. There's more confidence in it. But there's definitely risk that, they could do some things wrong. And they could, exactly what Tim was just saying, like they could make the rules where they're either way too overbearing and it doesn't work and nobody can really comply, or they're not aggressive enough and they don't actually really hold up and nobody's willing to pay for them. But I think a key thing that's needed in order to make this work appropriately, kind of to Tim's point there too, is that I hope that as they're looking at a farmer's ability to sequester carbon, that they do not make it based on how many boxes do you check. Instead, they're able to look at what is your net bottom line carbon sequestration utilizing real data. There's going to be models involved as well, so computer generated models to be able to help that to scale. But I want farmer innovation to really be the driver. And the more innovative you can be, the more aggressive you can be, the more creative you can be for each individual farming situation, the more carbon you can sequester and the more monetary gain you can have. Yeah. So really working on that, been very involved, way more than what I ever anticipated, but I hope it'll work out here for us.
You know, Mitchell, to that point, a lot of the innovation on some farms, not all farms, but a lot of the innovation, the pioneering in carbon sequestration for reasons that Recker described earlier, may go unrewarded in this though, right?
100%. Yeah. So how, and that's part of my point as how the rules are written today, a carbon market is really more so a new cost share for practice change. So it looks at what are your current practices and your historical practices. Mm-hmm. And now what are your new practices that you're going to adopt? And the further you can move the needle when it comes to adopting more systems that drive your adoption of cover crop, reducing tillage to no-till or strip-till, and reducing synthetic fertilizer, the more you change, the more you can get paid. But a lot of farmers that are the innovators have already been doing these things, just like we've been on our farm, like Tim's been on his farm. We don't really qualify the ways the rules are written today. However, that's what I mean by looking at annual sequestration, annual additionality to your net bottom line, because my argument would be my farm, Tim's farm, and other farmers that have their biological system functioning, they're the ones that are really sequestering maximum carbon.
That's great. Well, so well put, Mitchell. That's the point that we need to continue to stress through all of this with those that are developing the carbon market, because they are so focused in the private sector. They are so focused on those new practices and what it means to carbon sequestration. I don't know if we can get a focus back on things that have been done 15, 20, 25 years ago. We got a farmer forum going. Mitchell Hora and Tim Recker.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
More sponsors in America's Conservation Ag Movement: National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, SimPass, the Nature Conservancy, United Sorghum Checkoff Program, Valent USA, Farm Journal Foundation, and Trust in Food. Just go to www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more. We have got a conservation conversation going with Mitchell Hora and Tim Recker. Both are from Eastern Iowa. Mitchell's down in Southeast Iowa. Tim's up in Northeast Iowa. Guys, during the break, we had David from Central Illinois call in, and he didn't want to stay on the line because his cell was sketchy. But he basically said it's this whole concept is a new concept to a lot of farmers. And many of those farmers are going to take a lot of convincing that it works. And then he added, we may be one election cycle away from losing the climate forward focus of the White House. it's all, he makes fair points, don't you think, Tim?
Well, I believe so, too. Biden said there's $30 billion going into this climate change and carbon credits going into this, not this year, but the farm program. I guess we have to adopt with what is in front of us right now. And if we're already doing good things, why shouldn't we get rewarded from them?
Yeah.
Our problem in the past was carbon trading. It was like, show me the money. I'm willing to do it. We sequester carbon better than anywhere else in the world is in our Iowa cornfields. Let's do that. I think we have players now that have dollars that are and making them available. I look at all the different climate companies that are contacting me to want me to participate in their program, and they're coming with dollars. So I don't know if that answers the question, Chip, but it's a concern. It's a real concern. If we get all geared up in the next two, three, four years, and then it's gone, what then? The only thing I can say is if we're innovating and we're doing it, we probably aren't going to go backwards.
Right.
We're going to have people go forwards because they see the benefit.
Right, Mitch, basically what he's saying, what Tim is saying is if you give farmers a financial incentive to voluntarily do something, they'll they'll do it and find a way to make it happen.
Well, I think it's just going to get at least more people able to overcome the economic risk of changing practices. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of logistic concerns in there as well. You know, so the dollars are all right, but really it's just the cherry on top. To Tim's point, you know, you've got to do things smarter. You've got to implement the principles of soul health. There's so much data and resources available that I think this is a great opportunity for farmers that are looking to try to reduce their tillage or try a cover crop or try to experiment further on their farm when it comes to conservation. Carbon is the hot topic of today, and it's fine. And there's some dollars that can be had if it's the right fit for your operation. Read the fine print. These are long-term contracts. But if it works for your operation, I think it's great. But you've got to do things smarter. Got to work with Mother Nature. Got to understand biology. Implement the principles, because that's what's going to be there long-term. And it's not just going to be carbon as we go forward either. It's going to be carbon credits, water quality credits, water use credits, nutrient density. Like, this is there's a bigger tidal wave coming here when it comes to farmers being part of lots of solutions.
Right, right. You know, and just the simple fact that we've got two farmers from Iowa on the Farmer Forum today talking about these conservation issues, it might suggest that we think that Iowa farmers might be a touch further in advance than the rest of the Corn Belt. And I think we might be, Tim, because it was forced on us. You know, the Des Moines Water Works with its suit against a watershed up in northwest Iowa kind of forced it all on us, didn't it?
That's exactly right. That was probably the aha moment that says, maybe we need to change what we're doing because of the threat of a lawsuit that's coming to your area soon if you are not doing a good job with, you know, conservation. And that's the other, that's the worry is, you know, we can talk about the rewards, but we haven't talked about the penalties of if you decide that you will not do anything or don't want to participate in it because it doesn't work, it's not fitting in your system. What is the penalty on the other side if you do not decide to adapt into these new practices? That's been, you know, the stick hasn't been fully talked about yet.
That's right. That's right. Still a lot of carrots out there. Guys, I want to switch gears here real quick because I know there's something that Recker wants to talk about that's pretty important, and that is the staffing at the FSA office. Tell us about what's going on. And we've talked about it on the show, but, I mean, it's good to get confirmation from the real world that it's actually happening.
Well, I had got a call from my director that said that starting this week, across the entire FSA, I imagine it's NRCS too, that they're only going to be allowed 25% of the people to be in the office at any given time. And while up until this time, they've had 100% of their people, you know, doing COVID rules and separation and everything else. And this busy time that we have signups going on, we have CRP signups, we have farm program signups, and they can't afford not to have everybody on board in the office. And I question why. You know, I think that's the bigger question. We're going in this year. That's the last thing we want to do is have hiccups in our system that we're relying on to get things done in a timely manner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need to get that fixed as quick as we can. We're almost out of time. But, Mitchell, what's top priority on your farm right now?
I got some guys coming out here this afternoon looking at some new data. We're preparing to plant green, doing a lot with relay cropping, and a lot of soil sampling to do here over the next couple of weeks, testing for soil health.
Excellent. Recker, what about you? What's the top priority?
I'm in the shop doing a rebuild on a planter, on the second planter, and doing some new updates specifically for what the subject we're talking about, conservation.
Excellent. Excellent. Fantastic job, you guys. Really appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Chip. Appreciate good to be on. Chip.
Thank you.
All right. That is Mitchell Hora down in southeast Iowa. Tim Recker up in northeast Iowa. Great conversation about not just the financial rewards of conservation, but what you're doing for the soil health and everything. Hey, come back this afternoon. We've got Dan Bossi from Ag Resource Company. And tomorrow morning, U.S. Representative Dan Newhouse from Washington to discuss the Farm Workforce Modernization Act right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Tavium plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your Syngenta retailer to learn how Tavium can help protect against tough and resistant weeds for 3 weeks longer than dicamba alone. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide.